Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine, and today I have Dr. Tracy Erfling. She's a naturopathic physician in Astoria who wears many hats, including at the health department and in the office. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, Ann. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, you're welcome. It's always a pleasure. So today we're going to talk about the immune system. And until a few years ago, people never really talked about that, and now you pretty well can't have any kind of care without somebody mentioning, whether it's cancer care or pretty much any doctor, or people talking about supporting and helping your immune system. And we're going to talk about why that is.
Let's do it.
Okay.
It's a fairly complex system, and so both because I'm not an expert, and for all of our purposes as listeners, I'm going to kind of dumb it down a little bit. But basically, the idea of immunity is that it's something that is within our body protecting self from not self. So it's utilizing cells within the body to recognize things that are foreign as opposed to things that belong there. And once they recognize something foreign, identifying it, taking care of it in whatever way seems necessary. That is the basic dumbed down version of what our immune system does.
Well, so does that include the skin?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So the immune system is really working anywhere that blood reaches, and anything, you know, I would say maybe like fingernails might not be included.
Okay.
Hair, and some of that more heavily keratinized tissues, but everything really that has blood associated with its growth. Yeah. And
so that's everything
nutrition.
Else.
It's pretty much everything else.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, the skin is definitely a front line against not self.
It is a front line against not self. And actually, there is quite a bit of bacteria on the skin that is recognized as being self, even though it's not generated by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So the immune system is also recognizing those kind of organisms that are kind of our symbiotic friends in the body.
Right. And same thing in the gut.
Right. So this actually brings us to the first point that I wanted to make sure and make, was that, you know, kind of start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start. And and birth and breastfeeding are kind of the fundamentals of how the immune system gets established in the body. So research shows us that people that are born vaginally, or babies that are born vaginally, get exposed to the bacteria that actually end up lining their lung and gut tissue, which are two of the most important sort of defining parts of the body that really interface with the outside world. So babies that are born cesarean, actually I went to this conference and one of the doctors was talking about cesarean babies that are more immune challenged. One of the things they're looking at doing is like kind of, this is going to sound a little gross, but kind of smearing the baby with some vaginal fluids to help try to create that scenario of vaginal
mm-hmm.
birth.
Even though that sounds gross, it does make sense to do it.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of bacteria in the vagina. You know, the vagina is not a sterile environment. There's all sorts of things that are introduced into that area. And they are, like I say, it's a very integral part of how the immune system gets established.
And so how does it get in the lungs?
Babies are breathing. They're aspirating a lot of stuff as they go through the birth canal. And so, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's a gross amounts of fluid, but there's enough that those bacteria really take hold and start kind of there.
Of course, if they're in the mouth, eventually they're going to get everywhere.
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
So then the secondary point at that point in life is breastfeeding. And I think everyone kind of knows the message that breast is best, and breastfeeding really enables the infant to get exposed to a lot of immune globulins that the mother already has, because she's already grown up and learned, her body has learned all these things that then the infant needs. And so that really establishes sort of that real definite onset of the immune function.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then from there, you know, a little kiddo just continues to learn. I mean, that's another incredibly amazing and complex part of the immune system, is that it's constantly learning self from not self, basically. So every new thing, every new person, every new animal, every new surface, every thing that a little...
Every new place.
Yeah, everything that a baby, an infant touches and then puts in its mouth or, you know, wipes on its skin, or, you know, the immune system is coming into contact with that and saying, I don't recognize that. Let me figure that out. And when I see it again, I'll either know that it's okay or that I need to, you know, work on mm-hmm. defending myself against that.
And so then from the very beginning, once people are born, can they actually mount a response against something that's bad?
Yes, but depending on what age and certainly what type of breastfeeding exposure and blah 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 that the infant's been exposed to, that can be compromised. So that's why things like pneumonia and other really serious infections can be so much more problematic in this age group, is because the immune system isn't as good at that job.
Okay, so a lot of people will make comments like, their immune system is not fully developed, mm-hmm. or their immune system is compromised. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what that means?
Right. And so, the very young and the very old, I think, have this issue. The very young, for the reasons I've just kind of stated, because maybe they just haven't learned. Elderly populations, those cells just get a little tired, and they lack the sort of the strong circulatory power is to really get things to go where they need when it's needed. So those responses just don't mount as fast in elderly.
Do they? Do the elderly also have fewer of them? We're talking about like white cells,
right? Right. Sure.
Do we have fewer white cells?
Yep.
As we get
I think
older?
The power of regenerating cells obviously starts to deteriorate mm-hmm. as we age. Mm-hmm. So that's true of the immune system as well as many other parts of the body.
Right. So the whole thing is kind of mm-hmm. less.
Right. Exactly.
The whole vitality.
Which makes it a good reason to keep it on the forefront of importance, especially if you have a lot of immune challenges to begin with.
Right. Okay, so how does a person know if they are have an immune problem? I mean, maybe it's not as gross as, they don't have AIDS,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not that kind of glaringly obvious, but maybe not feeling well.
One of the things I make sure and check in with my patients is just asking them how they feel about their immune system. Some people are very clear that, it's strong, that they hardly ever get sick, which is great. But some people are like, I feel like I get sick more often than everyone around me. Or when I do get sick, I'm just down for the count for so much longer than, anybody else that has kind of the same illness.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some, fairly obvious indicators. But other things like allergies in general is something that I look at for immune function. And then there are a lot of autoimmune conditions that can be much subtler. And this is a completely different problem and sort of a show in and of itself. But autoimmune conditions also can indicate that there's just been kind of a poor regulatory process within the immune system. It's not doing a great job of distinguishing between when it needs to react and when it is overreacting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's attacking self, so it's kind of gotten a little distorted in its activity.
It's misbehaving.
It is definitely misbehaving.
So, what kind of cells are we talking about?
So there are a lot of different types of white blood cells in the body. There are some that, and again, this is a really, there's a lot of minutia here, so I'm going to kind of dumb it down, but there's cells that are roving and identifying, and then there are cells that are coming and reacting, which then brings in more specific cells that can actually take care of the problem, whether that be something that just kind of in a cell that comes in and just kind of envelops a problematic area, or something that releases some kind of a chemical that breaks down a certain type of bacteria. So there's, again, a very dumbed down version, but there's a lot of nuances of how those attacking cells work.
Okay, so like people will ask, where's my immune system?
Yeah.
And I know we talked in general terms, but more specifically.
Okay. So I think the two areas of the body that take the biggest brunt of recognizing self from not self are the respiratory system and the gut, the digestive system, because a lot of stuff is going in through our nose and our mouth. That's kind of, whether that be breathing or consuming or, just haphazardly things dropping in there. It's a place where we have a lot of interaction with the outside world. So mm-hmm. these are the two systems of the body that often can indicate where there is a malfunction in the immune system. So whether that's someone getting a lot of allergy, like upper respiratory sinusy issues, or someone having a lot of digestive problems. And I think there's a lot of cross between those two. So someone that I see that has a lot of allergy, environmental allergy issues, I'm always looking at the gut, because it's a lot easier to treat the gut and to solidify the immune system in that area than to try to avoid tree pollen.
Well, right. I mean, one of the things with allergies, environmental allergies, is if you look at, the people in the family, you know, three of the four people mm-hmm. are in the same air and they're mm-hmm. fine. Right. And the one who has the immune challenge is miserable.
Right.
It's obviously something wrong with them. It's not the pollen.
Right.
It's the response.
Right. Exactly.
And so the fix has got to be something to do with, mm-hmm. I mean, for all of us with challenges, we have to fix ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, I think it's kind of nice for patients that come in to think that there is another way at looking at how they can deal with their allergy issues other mm-hmm. than just taking
avoidance
suppressant, mm-hmm. you know, therapies. Healing right. the gut can often work pretty well. And then another answer to your question of where is the immune system is that, you know, we have these lymph nodes all over our body. And so those are also kind of a main hub of where the immune system is really kind of interacting. All those different cells I was talking about, that's kind of where they go back to and they interact and they kind of mount their army there and then release them from the lymph nodes. So you have lymph nodes a lot around your neck. I'm sure people have felt those when they've been sick. You have them in your armpits pretty profoundly and also in your groin. And then there's a whole set of lymph nodes that surround the major blood vessel, the aorta, that runs along your spine. So those are kind of the main hubs of where immune system activity can start.
And then let's talk about the gut bacteria. There's a lot of, that's a big buzz of, you know, everyone's taking probiotics, which mm-hmm. I think is great.
Mm-hmm.
But they may have no idea why.
Right. And I think I want to talk all about therapies. So I'm going to keep that as far as like okay. suggestions. Let's keep that for the second half. But I do want to mention that, you know, like 60% of our immune system is housed in our gut. Again, because this is a big area where self and not self are trying to be delineated. And so mm-hmm. it's really important for those gut bacteria that are recognized as self, even though they're not, to be distinguished from foreign substances, which are not self. And if that's not happening correctly, or if the bacteria are not there to kind of be doing the job that they do to digest some of those foreign substances, then the immune system is like way more taxed.
Okay.
So it can't focus elsewhere.
One of the things that happens to a lot of people is they'll ingest something, and this is whether it's food or whether it's an antibiotic or some other medication, and they'll get diarrhea.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems like, in some ways, a fairly profound gut response to this is not good.
Right, I need to eliminate this
right.
ASAP. Yeah, yes, it's true. I mean, that is an often an indicator that the gut needs some probiotic help mm-hmm. is diarrhea, for mm-hmm. sure.
So a person who's been on a lot of antibiotics,
mm-hmm. They should definitely be doing some due diligence to make sure they're repleting or replenishing the probiotic system within their gut,
okay,
for sure.
And we'll go into the specifics of what that might be when we talk about treatment.
Yeah. And so a few other things that I think maybe people don't recognize as affecting the immune system are obviously things like infections. That's pretty recognizable. Our environment. So that, again, back to kind of that environment, the allergy picture, where things that we're just breathing or being exposed to could be irritating our bodies because of our immune system dysfunction, or even just kind of chemicals and bad things in our environment really depleting the functioning of our immune system.
Right. You know, people can get sick and be fine one day and get sick because of overspray of your neighbor's mm-hmm. pesticide.
Right. Right. And that's basically probably involving more than just the immune system, but the immune system is certainly responsible for identifying that there is something that it's being overburdened by.
Mm-hmm. Do you consider the liver to be part of the immune mm-hmm. system?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's not as much, like the spleen has a little bit more activity as far as creating cells and the blood system per se, but the liver has to detox stuff. And so if the liver is not taking on that challenge terribly well, then it's going to leave more mm-hmm. responsibility to the other systems like the immune system.
Right. Or if it's overtaxed. I mean, right. you get a big surge of chemical contact, mm-hmm. you might overwhelm your liver's ability.
Exactly. Our diets have a pretty profound effect on our immune system, not, you know, only for the purposes or for the reasons we just spoke about as far as like chemicals and just mm-hmm. generally not so great food, but also there could be foods that you have allergies to. So that's a really big part of my practice, is helping people to identify food issues. And once we do that, we have a whole variety of things that we work with, either food eliminations and or, you know, supplemental help to help heal the gut a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But it takes a tax on the system when the body's having to react to a food you're regularly ingesting. Again, it just doesn't have the energy to kind of focus elsewhere.
You're listening to Your Health. I'm with Dr. Tracy Erfling. She's a naturopathic physician in Astoria, and we're talking about the immune system. So we kind of laid out the whole lymph, gut, lungs of what it is and where it is and how it works. So let's talk about what we can do about it.
Okay. I do have to mention one more thing.
Oh, good.
As a potential issue for the immune system is stress. We can't ignore that what we kind of ask our bodies to do, especially if we're asking too much of our bodies, can really tax the system.
Okay, that's a little too general. So let's be more specific.
It is. I totally agree with you. It's a general problem, and that's why it's hard to conquer as a physician, I'm sure, as you know. It's hard to have people, identify and manage
right,
the stress.
People can have a lousy coping skills in
yes.
every department.
Yes.
And I suppose they all would impact, but...
The basic sort of stress response system in the body kind of works like the medication prednisone, which basically turns off your immune system. So when you're under high amounts of stress, you have high amounts of cortisol in your system, it is not going to prioritize dealing with, not self, dealing with foreigners or dealing with infections, because it's trying to keep your body functioning when it feels like it's under too much stress. So it's just not a priority, basically.
Uh-huh.
And, I think that people function with a lot of stress and do just fine. Obviously, their immune systems don't peter out, but it is something that we need to keep kind of on the radar as far as something that we need to address people's stress management techniques. So we can talk about this in our therapy part, but I just wanted to make sure and identify that high stress can be a culprit.
And I think most modern people are mm-hmm. over the top on stress.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Not enough sleep.
Yeah.
Too much crap.
Yeah.
Too much to do.
Yeah, so my basic little rule of thumb for helping with stress management is to make sure you're eating regularly, so that you're eating, kind of quasi-scheduled meals, that there are certain times of the day when your body can rely on the fact that it's going to get some nutrition, exercise, because I think that really charges up the adrenal glands, which are responsible for our stress management internally. Making sure that someone does something relaxing every day, so just taking time out to be like, and breathe and do nothing of demand. And then sleeping, making sure the adrenal glands recover between the hours of 10 p.m. and 4 a.m., so making sure you're getting yourself to sleep or doing something restful, not watching, crazy news television shows, just being relaxed at least at 10, even if you're not asleep.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my little rules of thumb for...
I like that.
Yeah.
That sounds like you hit the point.
Yeah, I think it's pretty manageable for
most
people.
Being rigid.
Right, because there's some... everyone's different. We're not expecting everybody to obey the same routine in life, but it's routine is really important.
Some people are night owls, and you can't change it.
Yeah, yeah. But then nutrients that I think about for immune system very specifically are vitamin C. So vitamin C typically is one that I have people take to bowel tolerance, which means you start taking a gram a day and increasing by either 500 milligrams to a gram a day, until maybe your stomach feels gurgly or you get diarrhea, and then you just back off a little bit, and that's kind of your dose. And that might change over time, but that's where we start. Vitamin A, so this is a fat-soluble vitamin. It's extremely important for the respiratory system, which, again, as we mentioned, is a really problematic area with the immune system specifically. So my favorite way to get vitamin A, other than food sources, which are like yams and carrots and like winter squash, all those kind of rich orange and yellow colored vegetables, is cod liver oil. I think cod liver oil is a really wonderful fish oil, which is anti-inflammatory, and then it has nice levels of vitamin A. high levels of vitamin A are not indicated for women that are trying to achieve pregnancy or are pregnant, so that's just a little aside. And then vitamin D, another fat-soluble vitamin that I'm sure all of you have heard about, comes from the sun, but we are extremely deficient, although maybe not this summer, because the sun just never stops the sun shining. But in general, vitamin deficiency is quite common. And so that's something that can either be checked on a blood test or you can just start taking some vitamin D. I especially recommend it between the months of like October and May.
From October to October would be my recommendation.
Many of my patients are on that recommendation
as
well.
Yeah, so do you have an amount that would be like a generic, safe amount?
Yeah, I mean, most people take about 1,000, which I think is fine. Most multivitamins have only 400
which
milligrams.
Isn't enough.
Yeah. So 1,000 milligrams, I think, is the bare minimum, but mm-hmm. I have my patients on between 2,000 and 5,000, again, depending on blood testing or just symptoms. So I think just, a recommendation for the average Joe is between 1,000 to 2,000, unless you get
Great.
Tested or have somebody identify that you have a deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Zinc is a mineral, a mineral that is really important for helping the immune system to function more sort of furtively. And it can be nauseating when you take it on an empty stomach, so that's one to definitely take with some food or take it at night before you go to bed. And usually between like 10 and 15 milligrams is adequate for zinc.
Isn't that in most multis?
It is in most multis. It's also really rich in pumpkin seeds and oysters. So that might be a couple foods you could put in your rotation if you feel like you have immune problems. Mm-hmm. Pumpkin seeds are really easy to throw onto salads, and people either seem to like oysters or they don't, but oysters are a pretty tasty way to
That is pretty definite about oysters.
And then probiotics. So probiotics are, there are a million different kinds. They are fairly confusing to advise people on how to find the right one and how to take them. But here's my rules of thumb. If you're not getting it from your naturopath, which I think that naturopaths probably have some of the best sourced probiotics, because we can get ones that are human strain, which means that they're going to really colonize in humans a lot easier than in, they're going to colonize in self much easier than something that was grown on a yeast particle or on soil, or there's a lot of ways people grow probiotics.
Or on milk.
Yeah, or on milk. And then the second point is, if you are going to buy it over the counter, which is fine, I think probiotics over the counter do a fine job. They might just not be as strong for people that are really deficient. Then buying something that's refrigerated is important or is enteric coated so that it survives the acids in the stomach. And then refrigeration just ensures that they can be viable, because they're bacteria, so they have to be living.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that there's at least a million. I'm sorry, I should have checked on this before I did this show, but I think that you have to have at least a million organisms in each capsule. So it'll say that on the bottle, how many there are.
I think it's with a B, actually.
I think it might be a B, too. Yeah.
It's a big number.
So I apologize. And if you need specificity, feel free to call the office or email me. But, you just need the numbers there so that they survive past that acidic step in the stomach, which a lot of them will perish in that particular step. But many mm-hmm. will make it, which is good. And then I have people take them twice a day, once with food, because they get some benefit from getting the food substances, and then one without food, like before bed, so that they can colonize without the demands of digestion, because that will kind of give them the best of both worlds.
That's a great idea. Now, a lot of doctors tell their patients to just eat yogurt.
Right.
Talk about why
might not be the best way to go. I think probiotics are, in general, fermented foods are something that we eat a lot less of in our diet than we did 100 years ago or so. And so getting those foods that have good bacteria in them, yogurt would be one, sauerkraut, kimchi, miso, kefir. So these are some of the ideas I give patients. Food sources are great, but if you are really deficient and you need to kind of reboot the system, that's just not going to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't disagree with eating yogurt. I just wouldn't completely use it as a therapy for many of my immune system cases.
Because they're too challenged. It's not enough.
Right, exactly.
It's sort of like... And the organism, it's like it gives you one.
Right.
Or, you know, instead of, you can get probiotics that might have 8 different kinds of bugs in it.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's another thing for buying probiotics, is you want to make sure that you get a diversity of bacteria.
Not just one thing.
Right, right.
Most of them have several.
Most of them have several, but sometimes people just buy Acidophilus, which is fine, but it's not going to give you as much sort of bang for the buck as if you got something that also had Bifidus and Lactobacillus. And so there's a variety of organisms mm-hmm. that are really useful for the gut.
There's some even some ones that I don't even know how to say them.
Yeah.
It'd be like, well, something that begins with an S.
The Saccharomyces boulardii.
There you go. Yeah, that
yeah.
one.
Yeah. yeah. Yes. They have lovely little names, those probiotics. There's, of course, herbs that are really nice for stimulating immune system function. So the two that I wrote down that I just wanted to mention, because they're kind of everywhere and I think they're super safe for any kind of immune system issue, is echinacea, which I'm sure you've all heard of. A lot of people have heard that you shouldn't take echinacea continuously, which I disagree with. I think that there is, you know, some importance about dosing up when you're sick, as opposed to just taking the same dose all the time and expecting it's going to help you even when you're sick. But in general, it's very safe to take all the time. And then astragalus is my other favorite go-to, especially for like that chronic holding on kind of issues that just the body just can't seem to kind of get past that last little stage of whatever it is.
Who's like been coughing for 3 months.
Right. Mm-hmm. Their immune system just needs more of that chronic immune system help.
Is astragalus something that you take, like you make a tea with it?
You could. Mm-hmm. Any herb, any or either of these herbs could either be done in a tea, they could be done as a tincture, which is a little more fast but not quite as tasty delivery system, or there's capsules that you could buy just mm-hmm. to swallow. So, yeah, a lot of options in the herb department. Mm-hmm. Dietarily, a couple of things that I like people to pay attention to is not to overeat sugar, because sugar is very depressing to the immune system. It really will kind of shut it down. So just making sure you're really being selective about when you're having sugar, or just not having sugar, or the only sugar that I kind of am preferential to when you're avoiding sugar is honey. So just maybe sticking to honey.
So, you know what, it's ironic, because when people are feeling really lousy, sweet is what is appealing.
Right. They do like a ton of orange juice. And
right. Or like, you know, it's been really hot, we're going to have ice cream.
Right.
You know, we're feeling miserable, mm-hmm. so we're having mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Popsicles. Yeah.
And s'mores and, mm-hmm. You know, all that, just loading up with sugar stuff that's, I don't know, it's like feel good.
It's super comforting.
Yeah, but it sounds like overall it's not comforting.
Well,
at all.
And I think also when the body's under stress, which when you're sick, that's true, then that adrenal sort of stress response really kicks into gear and it kind of demands more blood sugar. And so the quick and easy way to get that is from sugar of whatever variety.
Okay.
So also making sure you're staying hydrated, because blood flow obviously is super important for immune system cells to get where they're going, and being properly hydrated will ensure that your blood is kind of able to get where it needs to go and have good flow. And, you know, if you're congested, it's going to help, you know, thin your congestion, or and it even helps to correct some of the issues with diarrhea too when you're having, you know, adequate amount of hydration. So
it's great. Something as simple as water can help your immune system. I love it.
Brilliantly simple therapy for a lot of things.
Well, and I think especially when it gets hot, but people get dehydrated. But I think most people are somewhat dehydrated all the time.
I think you're totally right about that.
Because mm-hmm. you wait till you think you're thirsty, and then you're already
dehydrated.
Or
I think we get mistaken, too. I think a lot of times when we think we're hungry, really we're thirsty.
Ah.
And so the body just doesn't quite delineate between those two sort of...
How do you turn your body into getting the right signal?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I think being well hydrated, I give my patients a hydration challenge when I feel like they're dehydrated, to drink half their body weight in ounces. So if you weigh 150 pounds, you drink 75 ounces of water. To do that for a week and just feel how it feels to be adequately hydrated. And then sometimes the messages get a little less crossed.
Oh, that's a great idea. So anybody could do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so your weight.
Yep, take your weight, divide it in half, and that's how much ounces of water. And I have people measure that amount out into some kind of a vessel so that they can see it, how much they have to drink every day, and try to consume it before like 9 o'clock at night. You know, don't do all of your water consumption between like 7 and 10, or else you're really going to be miserable in the middle of the night. And you do pee more, but your body will adjust. It'll kind of learn how to suck in that water into the cells instead of just passing it through the kidneys. But it will take a little time, which is why you should do it for a week.
That sounds great.
Yeah, this would be a great week to do a hydration challenge because it's going to be so nice and warm.
That's true. Okay, well, I'm taking the challenge.
Yeah.
We're up. Thank you very much. My guest has been Dr. Tracy Erfling. Thanks a lot for being here again.
You're welcome. I hope you all have great immune system function after today's talk.
Absolutely. You're listening to Your Health. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.